Hello, everyone, and welcome to season 4 of Movie Raw Minute. I want to once again thank all of my guests and listeners for helping me make the past 3 seasons such a success. It's been a lot of fun. This season, we'll be taking a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. For anyone out there who's a little unfamiliar with the idea and premise of what an MXM podcast is, it was something that was originated and I guess tweaked perfectly by Alex Robinson and Pete the Retailer back in 2012 when they began the Star Wars Minute, which is currently on hiatus between, I think it's 9th and 10th seasons. If it wasn't for their hard work nearly a decade ago, most of us wouldn't never be doing this. There are currently over 200 MXM podcasts as of this recording. I think the number is even closer to 250 at this point, and it is constantly growing because of all the fun people who have decided to get on the bandwagon. I want to give a quick shout out once again to all the MXMers who came before me, who have helped inspire me to do this insane idea of going through a movie minute by minute, which some people will agree that I've taken to the extreme by the way that I do things, but I like it, and hopefully everyone who's listening also enjoys it, and that's why you keep coming back. So I definitely appreciate that. There is a Facebook forum for all the MXXers, and I've made a lot of friends over the years with it, and they've been so helpful in all the aspects of creating and making this kind of show work so well. Personally, I also want to especially thank Jay Cluett, a friend of mine for, lots of years. I think we're friends for 6 or 7 years online. Still haven't met in person. Might happen one of these days. You know, if either of us leaves our country and goes to the other ones, who knows? So it's Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea podcast and of the current running Con Air podcast, who finally convinced me to start my own show after, I think he pleaded with me. I don't know if pleaded is the right word. I think he tried convincing me for about a year that it was right up my alley. And I finally, decided. So obviously without Jay, this never would have come to fruition. So thanks to Jay, wherever you are, you know, if, when you're listening to this. On this season, I also want to thank David Brooke for composing or doing a musical interlude for both the opening and closing music of this season. So thanks a lot, David. It's been really, it's really appreciated. And, you know, hopefully everyone will like the little tune that he has given us for this one. So this season we'll have 19 weeks of shows that will be delivered to you every weekday from now until the beginning of mid-May. So sit back and enjoy everything in these 96 episodes as my weekly guests and I begin to dissect this hilarious classic film in minute detail, 1 minute at a time. So I always have a lot of things for my guests to listen to during my deep dives into movies, and this season is no different. You know, over the next 4 months, we have some interesting things that we're going to be dealing with. So some of the new features that we'll have this season are Meg Ryan Monday, Harry Burns Hump Day, and Weekend Romance. And twice a week, we're also going to get little stories from Off the Beaten Track for the Dating and Courting edition. So let's jump right in. My guest for this week is none other than the aforementioned host of the Deep Blue Sea podcast and Con Air podcast, Jay Cluett. Welcome back to another first episode, Jay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Rob. And you mentioned in the intro that you and I have been friends for a long time. I feel like we're going to find out whether podcast hosts and podcast guests can be friends over the course of this series.
I don't know. As long as... I think if there's no sex involved, I think it can work. So I think we're good with that.
I think we'll be fine.
Exactly. I think we're good with that one.
We're quite far away.
Yes.
And I have to do an immediate correction. Star Wars Minute are between their 10th and 11th seasons at the moment on hiatus.
They're between their 10th and 11th? Okay, it's possible. There you go. So sorry, Alex and Pete, because I'm sure you're listening. It's between their 10th and 11th seasons. There you go. Which they're going to be starting up.
I'm the one who turned you onto their I turned you onto their show, so I feel like I have to correct.
No. That is completely fair. I appreciate that. It's hard to keep up sometimes with the seasons that people are on, you know, because
Yeah, and they're outside, or they're still within the numbered films, but they have the bonus ones. So like they're out to do the ninth film of the ninth of 11, which is
Right.
also the final
For
one.
now.
So it doesn't really.
Who knows? Maybe during the course of the next year, you know, which I doubt. Maybe they'll go back and do the start from the beginning again to figure
Maybe
out
they'll do the
what
Mandalorian
they,
minute by
you know,
minute.
did wrong. You know, if they you know, want to try and correct themselves for maybe things that they did at the beginning or something like that. Who knows? Because I'm assuming after 11
Maybe,
seasons,
maybe.
you pretty much come close to perfection of how to do things. You know, so you can look back at the beginning. That's why a lot of directors do, you know, director's cuts or, you know.
So I'm waiting for Deep Blue Sea 11 for my podcast to finally be going well. I've perfected it by then.
Maybe, well, yours is a little different because, you know, you keep skipping movies, you keep changing movies. So, you know. But, I don't know if, well, Deep Blue Sea 4 hasn't come out yet. You know, even though it was supposed to come out.
Not, well, it might have done by the time this comes out. It won't have.
I thought it was supposed to come out in Shark Week 2022.
Yeah, it was supposed to. Yes, we were lied to by the director.
Maybe, I don't know if you'd say that you were lied to. I think it's...
He's made a different film since he told us that.
So. Is that what it is? Well, no, but you don't know what happens behind the scenes. Yeah. You know, it's possible that he was planning on doing it, and then they said, okay, we're putting it on hiatus, so, and then he got another job and took it. So you can't really blame him for that. Maybe he's lying to you.
I don't blame him at all.
It's possible he's lying to you. He said, you know what? I'm just going to tell Jay and Mark that we're going to do it, and I'm just going to go do things on my own. Who knows?
Yeah, we're watching John Pogue's career with great interest.
Yes, for sure. So episode one of When Harry Met Sally begins with a lion, roaring. Well, okay. Happy New Year was yesterday. This is already January 2nd. You know, everyone hopefully is over their hangovers because their hangovers were before the final episode of yesterday's, or actually they might now just be listening to you and I discussing, you know, the final episode of Die Hard. You never know.
Yes.
That's right.
The perfect recovery.
Why not? Well, listening to both of us, I think it's pretty much a way to get over, maybe to become sober. Who knows? Or to decide to go back and drink more. That could be also.
Let's see, I'm still drinking. So.
on January 2nd, you're still drinking. That's good. All right, so episode one begins with a lion roaring and ends with a credit of Princess Leia. So, yes.
Yes.
Yes,
very
for sure.
Film.
For sure, for sure. But we'll get there.
Actually,
we'll get there. We'll get
film,
there. We'll yes. Because, you know, the relationship between Luke and Leia and Han and Leia, you know, completely changes when they have sex. So, you know, that.
Oh, Bruno Kirby is Han Solo. I can see that, man.
We don't talk about Bruno Kirby today. He's not going to be on until tomorrow. That's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Yeah, we'll get there.
So, I mean, basically, it opens up with the MGM lion, you know, doing his roar. You know, the great, do you know how many years they've had this line as the opening of MGM?
Well, the studio's got to be over 100 years old. But I'm guessing it's not the same lion.
No, that is.
But it's one of my favorite film logos. It's one of the first ones that you kind of pick up on as a kid. Like, oh, there's a lion roaring, a film's about to start.
Right.
It's fun.
The current lion that we're looking at, we'll get to in a second. But in general, there have been 11 different lions who've been used for the MGM logo. Okay. The first logo was done in 1924. Okay. I actually even have the names of all of all of the different lions. Okay. There was
How many were called Leo?
Oh, sorry, the final one. Excuse me, the final one. The final one. There you go.
There
so
we
you
go.
Have Slats, Jackie, Numa, Telly.
Hang on, Slats.
Yeah.
Slats and the lion.
Slats, Jackie, Numa, Telly, Coffee, Tanner, George, and then Leo is the lion that was used from 1957. Okay.
I do like the idea of there being a casting call for lions. There just being like 12 lions lined up and a producer walking down the line, like, you roar. Now you roar. Come on, give it some feeling. Do it again.
Right. So, I mean, Leo has been used for 65 years. It's just unbelievable that they're using the same lion. Maybe it's because of you know, all the different, you know, animal rights groups or whatever, that they don't want to let you try it again. You know, I don't know.
He's still looking good. Yeah, he doesn't look a day over six.
Well, you can say that about anyone who's captured on a film. You know, you have that with...
I assumed he did it live each time.
Yeah, exactly. So the truth is that in 1968, they tried something different. They tried using what's known as a stylized lion, which was like just a picture of a lion, but it only appeared in like two movies. They like hated it and got rid of it really quickly and went back to using Leo. And in 2021, they introduced a CGI logo, which uses Leo. You know, they took the same pictures of Leo, and he's what's being used, you know, in the CGI. Now, did you notice that there's something written over the frame of the lion?
I'm looking at it right now. It's Latin, Ars Gratia Artis, but I don't know what that means.
Okay. So Ars Gracious Artis means art for art's sake.
Okay.
Okay, which is a phrase that expresses the philosophy that the intrinsic value of art and the only true art is art itself. You know, when you do art, you do art for its own sake, not for anything else. So
yeah,
I don't know why they chose to use that here. It's
an odd slogan for a company to have.
Yes.
Because we all know that most people are in this for the money. Yes, they enjoy making it's good if you like what you do. But films that don't make money don't tend to get made.
Correct.
or they don't tend to get repeated, I should say.
Right, but you can at least...
They get made and don't make money.
They can at least say that that in theory they are there for the sake of art.
Yes. Yeah, okay. But yeah, art for art's sake is a good slogan that I think more governments should take on board.
Yes. Now, do you know a different movie that uses that phrase that's very prominent in the movie?
Every MGM film. No,
in the movie itself. Not
my immediate knee-jerk reaction is The Artist, but other than that, I don't know.
No, there. I'll give you a hint. It's the name of a frat house.
Why can't I think of the name of that? The one with Bluto.
That's right.
In it.
The yeah, motto of Delta like, House is Arts Gratis Artis.
I can't remember the name of that film.
That
it's
is called
in my head.
It's called Animal House.
Animal House, thank you.
Yes.
I'm getting old, apparently. It's been a long day.
Well, it's okay. I never would have, that's something I found. I mean, like I've seen Animal House numerous times. I've never noticed that. You know, that's the, you know, it's not like Revenge of the Nerds where you know it's Lambda, Lambda, Lambda. You know, it's like, but for the Delta House to have that as their...
I was generally thinking of Animal House. I just couldn't think of the name.
Okay.
And it's nice that's got the MGM time. And of MGM is the animal studio with the lion in the logo.
Yes.
So that's the Animal House.
That's right.
Animals in the house.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you look at the logo itself, it's got some really cool things. First of all, you know, it has the film script on the sides.
Unspooled.
Yeah, like an unspooled...
But it goes around the whole thing is the film unspooled around the lion.
Exactly. Because you see the dots on both sides. You know, so that's just really cool the way that they do that. And then there's, like, a strange, like, mask or face underneath it.
Yeah, it's odd to have just one.
It looks like a Joker. It looks like the, you know, a mask, a ski mask that someone would wear that just has a
with like a heart for the mouth. Yeah, but yeah. You think they would have done the two masks of the theater masks, the happy one and the crying one.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they couldn't get the rights to it back then. Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. So I mean, there have been tons of spoofs of this logo over the course of the years. First of all, you have on TV,
Jerry did one, I think.
That's right. Tom and Jerry did one. MTM Enterprises, which did the TV shows Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart Show, and a whole bunch of other things. So they did something similar with a cat. That was the MTM Enterprises.
Okay.
Did you ever see the movie Strange Brew with Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas?
It's on my list. I haven't got to it yet.
Okay, so right at the beginning, they show them, with the lion, and then the lion like burps, and then they fade in, and you see the two of them like sitting there next behind the lion is like looking out of the window with the head, and the two of them are there like cranking the back of the tail or something like that. So they use that
It's a
there.
shame it's not. It's a shame it's not Disney's logo, so they could have Simba in there, or Mufasa, or someone for a parody
Or
of some sort,
Scar.
or the mayor from Zootropolis, Zootopia.
Right. Now I know you're a Muppets fan, so the Muppets did a
I am.
spoof of it also.
With Fozzie, I'm trying to think of the most lion-like of Muppet animal.
Well, it was
Animal.
okay. Animal is there in The Great Muppet Caper. Fozzie is there in The Muppets Go to the
Okay.
Movies. And also in there's a Muppet Baby episode, which also shows them. And then they have a baby animal roaring, and then Gonzo's face replaces him.
Okay. Gonzo, not terribly lion-like, but I'm glad I got
Yes.
Fozzie and Animal as being the most
Yeah.
lion-like
Well,
Muppets.
would you say that? No, Fozzie's a bear, though.
Yes, but like a bear is closer to a lion than a frog is,
One second, one
for
second.
instance.
No, but what's animal? Animal's not a frog.
No, but Animal is like a furry creature, like a and all Muppets are fell for fur in some way. But Animal is like a creature that kind of screams and roars and
Like a lion,
which is what the
maybe?
lion's doing here. Exactly, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's why I thought of him as being
Ah, okay.
lion-like. And of course, the lions play the drums, as we
Yes, of
all
course. Who else? Who else would play the drums besides them? Okay. Now, the Marx Brothers also did spoofs of it. They're in their movie A Night at the Opera. Okay, in the beginning of the film, you see the one of the lions, and then right afterwards you see Groucho and then Chico, and they roar inside of the circle. And then you
I was hoping it would be a line with
Yeah,
Groucho Crouching.
no. And then you have Harpo show up at the end and do the same, but obviously he's silent, and then he honks his horn instead of having the roaring. So yeah, that's just yeah, makes a lot of
That's
sense. It's the way you do it. So I mean, one of the things I was also looking into is like, is there a set way that they do credits, in a movie at the beginning? Like, is there, obviously. A season and a half ago, I had a conversation with Dana about, the people have it in their contract where they will be located, in a particular in the credits and things like that. But the question is there a typical type of order that you go through things? So I did a little research on this, and apparently there's the traditional way that people do it, that they do have an order about the way that it goes. And obviously there's sometimes changes based on the union or guild requirements and things like that. But what they try to do basically is that you have it starts with the companies that are involved, followed by the top billing, above the line, above the title or whatever it is, which are usually contractually obligated. I'm assuming that in this movie, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan had it in their contracts that they have to be above the title.
I mean, the
Yes, of
title
course. No,
character,
but not
sorry.
every movie does it that way. And then after that, they have the different list of contributors to the film based on their importance. Okay, but what they do is they do it backwards. They start from the least important, and then they go with the most, and then they end with the most important. So a typical structure would be, first you'd have the distributor, the production company, which in this one is MGM, and then you have the production company that actually produces the movie, which we'll get to in a second with that is Castle Rock, and then it'll say a filmmaker film, the name of either the director or producer, the type of film, and then you have the film title, the lead cast, supporting cast. Then that they follow after that with the casting director, music composer, costume designer, associate producers, editors, production designer, the DP, executive producer, writers and then finally the director. Obviously, when you have the same person doing multiple roles, so that sometimes will change along the way of how they do that. And this movie pretty much does fit that structure. I mean, Die Hard, when we went through the credits on Die Hard, it was a little different, and also Planes, Trains, Automobiles was done a little differently. But this one follows through with the order that I was able to find that is the general order that is used. Okay. So then the next thing that we get to is the Castle Rock Entertainment logo. Okay. Now, do you know what Castle Rock is, Jay?
It's in Stephen King books, I
Yes.
think, is the
Yes,
Castle
it
Rock, Maine.
is. Well, it's Castle Rock,
And
Maine in the
of
books,
course,
but in the movie Stand By Me, it was Castle Rock, Oregon. I don't know why they changed that.
right. And so, of course, Rob Reiner directed
Yes.
Stand By Me and would go on to direct
Yes.
Misery, to Stephen King stories. So I didn't look into why he named his production company after that. It seems a pretty niche thing. Did you?
Well, it's basically he created the company. There were four people that created, or how many people created the company? The company was put together in 1987 by Martin Schaefer, Rob Reiner, Andrew Scheinman, who's also a producer in this movie, Glenn Padnick, and Alan Horn. Okay,
Yes.
and basically, Rob Reiner decided to name the company in honor of the fictional main town that is used in numerous Stephen King novels. And I didn't know
I
this.
think
It was
it's
originally
from Lord
from,
of the
that's right,
Flies
there you
originally.
go. I was about to say that. It was originally
Okay.
used in Lord of the Flies. It was the name of the fictional mountain fort in the novel. And they decided to create this company. Now, I mean, I've always loved seeing this logo around because of the fact that I knew the connection to Stephen King. So it was always great to see that. Originally, Coca-Cola was part of it also. They paid for part of the they were part of the company, but then they dropped their stakes a few months later. And they were replaced by Columbia Pictures Entertainment. And
Okay.
no, it's just it's first of all, it's a cool logo. It's the idea that you
Yeah, I
have
like
this.
the light going around.
It, yeah. Okay. Do you know any? Can you think of any famous TV shows that very much use the idea of Castle Rock Entertainment?
Seinfeld.
Exactly. Seinfeld became
Seinfeld
okay.
is the big one.
Fine.
The people behind Castle Rock, I'm sure, aren't hard up for cash any time. Because of Seinfeld, and I think Alan Horn is also part of Disney these days,
Yes,
like quite
Alan Horn
actively.
is part of
So,
Disney, and he will come up numerous times over the next few days. I do have things to say about Alan Horn, even though he's
I think it might be the
specifically
same thing that I
not in
have to
this
say about
movie.
Alan
I
Horn.
don't know. It's a question of whether it'll be episode three or not. Who knows?
Yes, we will see.
It will. Okay, could
Yeah.
be. Right. So that's Castle Rock, which it was actually I think they closed it down. I don't think it's still around. I think it was closed down and then it was reopened.
It's part of Warner Brothers these days,
Right.
apparently.
It was bought up.
Relaunched 2020.
Right. Yeah, Rob Reiner relaunched it, which is interesting.
Which
I mean, I don't know enough about how the system works, but if you're bought up by one company, you generally can't use your name again. The name no longer belongs to you. But
well, looking on their Wikipedia, they don't have any releases tied to them since 2018.
right.
They've got a few upcoming films, including the Spinal Tap sequel.
Yeah, I saw about that also.
Albert Brooks' film, Father of the Bride sequel, Daughter of the Bride. But yeah, so I don't know how active they are,
Right.
but apparently they were relaunched, so we'll see.
And then after we get the logo of Castle Rock, we get the next note logo, which is the next company that's connection here. It's or not even a logo, just it says it, in association with Nelson Entertainment.
So it's
Why are
a
you
pretty
laughing?
Uninspiring logo, if that's the logo.
Right. Well, Nelson Entertainment, I actually looked up what it is, and they're basically a company that was created in 1985, and they basically hold the rights to video distribution, the home video distribution of lots and lots of movies. They were eventually bought out in 1991 by New Line Cinema, and they rebranded them New Line Home Video, right? But it's interesting that I wonder if this is in the theatrical version also. I mean, they don't add these things in later. They already, I guess, already know who's going to be in charge of the home video aspect of it. You know, it doesn't make sense that they would add this afterwards. You know, so it means that it was something that was decided beforehand. That this is how they were going to do it.
I think they were in the theatrical release. Just kind of looking up now. I obviously didn't see this film in theaters. I was two when it came out.
I was a little bit older. I was 15 when it came out, and I did see it in the theater.
The year after this, Castle Rock and Nelson did release Lord of the Flies, the film of that. So I suppose they guess they had to with that name, with the production company.
It makes sense. Well, actually, it says here that the distributor was Columbia.
There's distributors and there's co-producers.
Ah, okay.
So Castle Rock was their co-producer on the. That's why.
That's right, because Columbia here. Right. Okay. The distributor was Columbia Pictures.
I can't go into what the difference between these things are, but.
Nope, neither can I. I didn't check into it. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint everybody. There's something that I didn't check into. It wasn't that important to me, I guess you can say.
they made the film.
One of the things I did. That's right. That's right. I didn't mention anything about the release date of this movie. So this movie was released on July 14th, 1989. They actually did a. It was a. What did they call it? The release was done gradually. So in the first week that it came out, it was only in, I think, like 40 different theaters.
Yeah, this is back in a day where on its opening release, it made like $1 million the opening weekend. But it would slowly go over the summer to make 92 in America.
Yes,
which
correct.
You don't end up making. That's a shame.
Right, and it also didn't make that much overseas because its total worldwide gross, I guess, gross is 93 million. So it only made $1 million outside of America. I guess I guess not many people outside of America could get the idea of a man and a woman being friends and close friends as long as they don't let the sex get involved.
Do you know why the July 14th, 1989 date is very special to me?
Okay, well, first of all, it wasn't when Deep Blue Sea came out. I know. And also, it wasn't when Con Air came out. It was exactly 1 year minus a day before after Die Hard came out. Die Hard came out on July 15th. I don't know if to say whether maybe that's when your parents got married.
No,
I don't know.
Well,
you have a sibling that was born that day?
Well, July 14th, 1997. Is the day that Cameron Poe is released from prison in Con Air, and he was in prison for 8 years. So, if it was 8 years to the day, then July 14th, 1989 is when he goes into prison.
Oh man, you know what? I have to tell you that this is really funny. Jay and I recorded an episode last week on Con Air, and when I watched the movie, I did notice it, and I wrote it down, and I forgot that I had written that down. Oh my God. That was something I was going to bring up.
I'm just noticing
I was going to bring
now.
Up the fact
because
that
you're saying July 14th, 89. Is like, wait a minute.
that's hilarious. It really is something that I can even, if you want, I can show you proof that I have written
it down.
I
believe you. It's
I can send it to you on WhatsApp because I wrote it on in my phone.
It's all right. I believe you.
That's really funny. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we'll have other connections to other movies later this week too. I have a great connection to another movie in when we get to episode three, but we'll get there. So basically, when Harry Met Sally didn't, it did a nice amount in the box office, did a nice job, but it never was higher than ranked third because it came out in the summer. I mean, the summer is when people go see action movies. They don't see rom-coms and stuff like that. The first week that it came out, it was ranked 14. Do you have any idea what movie was ranked first that week?
89 is a stacked year.
Yes, it really is.
Batman would have been around there.
No, Batman was actually number two that week.
Okay.
Okay, number one was Lethal Weapon 2,
Of course.
which came out the week before.
The magic of
Okay, Batman
Batman
was in its.
is the slogan
That's true.
for that
Could be.
non-magic
Batman was. Batman was fourth that week. It was the fourth week, sorry. It was the fourth week of Batman, and it was ranked second. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was also in its fourth week. That was the third.
Of course. Yep.
Then you had two other releases that came out the exact same day. One of them is a James Bond movie, License to Kill,
License to Kill, yep.
which was ranked four that week. Okay,
Dalton's final one, yep.
that's right. Then we had
Benicio del Toro, Robert Downey from Die Hard.
a Disney re-release of Peter
Oh,
Pan.
Grand Ole Butch, also from Die Hard. Disney re-release.
Of Peter Pan, that was
Peter
also
Pan, okay.
that also debuted that week, and that ranked number five. Okay.
Sorry, there's the you'll get this in a future episode, I'm sure. One of the actors who plays one of the documentary couples is called Peter Pan,
Yes, I
which
do
I
know
just
that.
I was scrolling through the credits. I was like, wait a minute, and
Yes.
then Peter Pan came out the same day. Nice.
Yes. I'm assuming that he is the Oriental man telling his story.
The Asian man, I think, is
The Asian man, excuse me, the Asian man. I didn't mean
yes.
the.
I know, but yeah, he's paired up with Jane Jung, so I think that is correct.
That makes sense. Yeah. And then rounding out the rest of the top 10 that week is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which was ranked sixth. It was in its eighth week of since it debuted. Ghostbusters 2 was in its
Was in
fifth
its
week.
eighth week of being the best film of 89.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yes. Okay, that's true. Dead Poets Society was eighth, and they were in their seventh week of release. Weekend at Bernie's was number nine, in its second week, and the last movie in the top 10 was Do the Right Thing, which was in its third week.
Yes, the film that didn't win Best Picture because of Driving Miss Daisy. That classic we're still talking about today.
Do the Right Thing. Do the Right Thing wasn't nominated.
No, but still, Driving Miss Daisy won
Ah,
in
yes. Okay, that's true.
this year of stacked films and classics and
Yes.
independent filmmakers coming out onto the stage and won a year of cinema. Let's give Best Picture to Driving Miss Daisy.
Yes. That's true. And rounding out 11, 12, and 13 before When Harry Met Sally were The Karate Kid Part 3, Great Balls of Fire, and Field of Dreams. Field of Dreams was in its 13th week, and it still did better than Harry Met Sally did in its first week. So
Costner, people love Costner.
that's right.
Yeah.
Right. So the
And
second
again,
week.
this film came out in like four cinemas.
That's right. No, it came out in more than four. It
Yeah.
came out in 41 theaters.
It was a limited release
Yes,
on its
it was.
first
So
weekend.
the second week, when it had its full release, where it went to 775 theaters, it was ranked three. Okay,
Okay.
it was behind Lethal Weapon 2, Batman, and then you had
Makes
When Harry Met
sense, yeah.
Sally, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and License to Kill. So you see, License to Kill and Peter Pan both came out the same, they both released the same week as When Harry Met Sally, and in the second week, it surpassed both of them, especially given the fact that both of them had twice as many theaters. They both had
Well, Peter
1,500
Pan was a
theaters.
re-release, and License to Kill is wasn't well received, if I recall. People didn't love Dalton as Bond. I do.
Right. Well,
I
it's
do
probably
apologize to any listeners. You can hear fireworks in my background. I'm sorry. People are still
well, it's
celebrating New Year's, it would
people
seem.
still suffering New Year. Right. So in the second week, the two movies that were brand new movies that were released were UHF with Weird Al
Yeah,
and
topical.
Shag, but both of them did terrible. Both of them,
And what was that second one?
Shag.
The hell is Shag? There's some Austin Powers prequel.
It was not The Spy Who Shagged Me. Here it
Is
says,
it about
in the summer
carpet
of
manufacturer?
1963, Carson is getting married to her boyfriend. So her friends Melanie, Pudge, and Luann take her to Myrtle Beach for one last irresponsible weekend.
Ah, the 80s.
Yes.
Pudge.
Yeah, well, shag. What can you expect? So yeah, I mean, as I said, this the second week was the highest when Harry Met Sally ranked in the box office. It reached third, and then for the next 2 months, it was either fourth or fifth, and then it dropped down to sixth in late in the end of September, beginning of October, and then mid-October it.
Still very impressive to stay in the top
Yeah,
five that long, given
that's
how
true.
stacked that summer was, and given that this is a rom-com, kind of a. I know things are different these days, but this, when Harry Met Sally plays just as well at home as it does in the
Yes, for
cinema,
sure.
I think. If, obviously, you didn't have streaming back then, or even DVDs,
That's right. That's very true. You had Betamax. There you
this doesn't feel like a must. You gotta see it on the biggest screen possible. Well, you're
go.
fine.
Right. And then we have it dropped down then in mid October to the 9th, and then 12th, and then it was gone after 15 weeks in the theater. So yeah, but it still had a nice impressive run. Still making $93 million is pretty good, considering that at the time that is a great amount of money to make for a rom-com. I don't know how that compares to today, because they probably spend more money on CGI in rom-coms today than but who
Absolutely.
knows.
I think half of the 27 dresses were all
There you go.
CGI in that
That's
Katherine
right.
Heigl film. That's a topical reference, 27
Very
dresses.
topical, very topical. So after we get the Nelson Entertainment, we get a Rob Reiner film. So we'll talk about Rob Reiner tomorrow when we get there. Or actually, not even tomorrow. We'll talk about him on Wednesday. Followed by the screen credit of Billy Crystal. Okay. Do you know, first of all, what Billy Crystal's real full name is?
I don't, but just to jump back, "Marry Me," which came out last year, a recent rom-com, cost $23 million to make, and it made $50 million at the
Wow.
box office.
Okay.
So that's some kind of
Okay. Well,
comparison to like these big stars.
right. That's true. With J-Lo and Owen Wilson.
Owen
Right.
Wilson, yeah,
Wow. It only doubled
I liked it.
it's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think that's just in America. I'm not sure what it did worldwide, but I think it was
Okay.
fine. Anyway, I do not know Billy Crystal's full name. I'm guessing it's not William
Well, it's
Crystal.
William Edward Crystal. Okay. He was
Okay.
born on March 14th, 19.
Wait, Crystal's his
Yes,
real
it is.
surname? That's incredible. That's such a
Yes, it
stage
really
name.
is, but that is his real name.
Fair enough.
And so he was born on March 14th, 1948, which would mean that when this movie came out, he was 40 years old.
Yeah, okay. That's that wig's doing a lot of work in the opening scene when we get
I can't remember who it is. There's someone else who was born on March 14th that was that's also quite famous. I don't think it was in 48. I was thinking it was Bruce Willis, but it wasn't, because Bruce Willis was born on March 17th, I believe. So
It's Pi Day
yeah, no,
in that one.
it's
Because it's 3.1.
okay. Wait, you knew
Well, that
that
is
without
Pi Day. Yeah,
looking,
so it's
or you just had
3.14
to?
is Pi Day.
Oh, that pie. I was thinking
I mean,
PIE.
it can be if
Right.
you want.
Okay, that's right. That makes sense.
I'm looking up who was born
That's right.
on March
3.14.
14th. Busby Berkeley was born on March 14th.
Whatever, doesn't matter. Thank
I will continue to
you
look.
for maybe you'll find someone interesting. That's what you're saying. Well, let's put it this way. There on IMDb there are 1,422 people that were born on that day. Michael Caine.
Okay,
There you
and
go.
Busby Berkeley died on March 14th. I was looking at the wrong list.
Okay, Layla Robbins. There you go. That's what probably made me think of it. Layla Robbins, who played Steve Martin's wife in
Of
Planes, Trains, and
course.
Automobiles. So,
Part of the movie rob universe.
Jamie Bell, Ansel Elgort.
Chris Klein of
Yeah,
American
there.
Pie.
That's right. There you go. There you go.
There
Pi
we go.
Day. That's actually very funny that someone from, you know, from American Pie was born
It'd
on
be
Pi
great if they
Day.
all were, if the entire cast. Oh, Alison Hannigan. No, she wasn't. But
Yeah, but
she
she'll
will.
come up later today also. She definitely will. Okay, so we have a credit for Billy Crystal. So Billy Crystal he has six Emmys. He was nominated 21 times for Emmys. He has won six of them. He has a Tony Award. He has a Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. He has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Okay, he was the host of the Oscars 9 times between 1990 and 2012, which is only second
Bob Hope,
to
yeah.
Bob Hope. Okay, and he's was announced this year that he's going to get a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Critics' Choice
Fair
Award.
enough.
Okay, his father. Have you ever seen or heard 700
I have
Sundays?
never heard of that, but I've heard it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a one man show that Billy Crystal did on stage for many years. That's what he won a
Okay.
Tony for, and it's all about his life growing up. About 700 Sundays, you know, about his it. First of all,
Okay.
it's fascinating. You know, if you get a chance, you should definitely try to get a copy and listen to it and watch it. It's great. But he mentions there about his father. His father, Jack Crystal, okay, owned and operated the Commodore Music Store that his grandfather had founded. His grandfather, and Crystal's father was a jazz promoter, and he was a producer, and he actually was an executive for Commodore Records. All right.
Jack
Now,
Crystal is a great name.
what that
Jack
means
Crystal is
is
like
that.
a kind of Jack Slater kind of action hero name. He should have a whole
Yeah,
franchise.
it's true.
Jack Crystal.
And apparently, Billy Crystal mentions in 700 Sundays that a whole bunch of jazz people, he grew up with all these jazz people in their living room all the time, you know, coming and playing with them. And you know, he said he knew Billie Holiday, Eddie Condon, Pee Wee Russell, Orville Shaw, and things like that. So he definitely had an interesting childhood from that perspective. Okay, he actually attended Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, and he was accepted there on a baseball scholarship.
Ah, okay.
All right, he was Billy Crystal was a very
I
big
think he
baseball
still is,
fan,
I think.
and he actually had his dream. That's right, he had his dream fulfilled on March 12th, 2008. The New York Yankees, signed him for a one-day minor league contract. Okay, and he was invited to spring training, and he was going to be 60. It was 2 days before his 60th birthday, so he was given the number 60, and he actually played in a game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. They had him as the he led off as the designated hitter, and he fouled a fastball. And eventually was struck out by the Pirates pitcher Paul Mahomes on six pitches. And later on, he was actually replaced in the batting order by Johnny Damon, and they basically released him on March 14th on his birthday itself. So first of all, it's a pretty cool thing. You know, here's a guy who always dreamed of being in a Major League Baseball player, and you know, he got to play on a team, he got to play on his team, you know, for 2 years.
Yeah, but then he got.
No, for two
I feel
days, sorry.
like, I mean, he got
Two.
struck out. So I don't.
Yeah, but he's a
I get
60-year-old
it. So
guy
I feel
playing
like
against
Paul, the pitcher should have. I get it. He's playing for the opposing team. But it's Billy Crystal. Like, throw him a slow ball.
maybe he's not a fan of When Harry Met Sally.
I hate it, City Slickers. This is straight in the air.
You go. That's right. Billy Crystal was also the first and final guest of Jay Leno on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno over the course of the I think 20 years that he was on there. He was on numerous game shows over the course of the 70s and 80s. He was on Hollywood Squares, All Star Secrets, $20,000 Pyramid, and he still holds the pyramid record for getting his contestant partner to the top of the pyramid and into the winning circle in the fastest time in 26
Wow.
seconds. Which is pretty amazing. That, I mean, if you think about it, Billy Crystal being able to talk really fast, makes sense. You don't have to put him on double speed to listen to him. Right. So he ended up leaving Huntington College and went to NYU, where he got a BFA in the School of Fine Arts, where one of his instructors was Martin Scorsese, and two of his classmates were Christopher Guest and Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone?
So,
have they ever worked together? I know that he and Christopher Guest have. But...
No, but you'd think they would have that he would have put him in JFK or something like that, you know. Maybe one of them was caught cheating off the other in the middle of
I don't talk to a lot of people I went to university.
BFA test.
If I was making a film, I wouldn't cast any of them. Or very few. They know who they are.
Okay, that makes sense. That is
fair. They know what they did.
There you go. And, okay. We won't go there. Maybe one day I do like Animal House or something like that. We'll have off the beaten track, college.
I got a
college stories, and then you'll be able to tell us about that type of thing. Only a week. Come on. All right, and then the next screen credit we get is Meg Ryan. Now, do you know what Meg Ryan's real name is? And I will tell you, it is not William.
Is it a Megan Ryan?
No. Her name is Margaret Mary Emily Ann.
That's too many names.
Hyra. That's right. But that's what it is. She actually took on the name Ryan when she joined the Screen Actors Guild. She decided to use her grandmother's maiden name, which was Ryan. So that's why she just changed it to Meg Ryan. She was born on November 19th, 1961. And she actually studied journalism. In university. She was at the University of Connecticut, and then she graduated from New York University. And this movie is her first lead role.
Yes.
She was in other movies beforehand. We know she was in Top Gun. You know, shout out to the Top Gun Minute. But, she had a few other small roles in other films in the 80s, but this was the first time that someone took a shot by letting her be the lead. And I guess you could say the rest is history.
They wanted Molly Ringwald for it, which I don't think that would have worked very well. She's excellent in this. Obviously, she's not in this minute. No one is, but she and Billy Crystal both. Like the four main actors of this film are all just excellently cast, perfectly cast.
It's because they have such great chemistry all together.
I mean, speaking of Alison Hannigan, there was obviously the stage production with Alison Hannigan and Luke Perry.
That's what I was going to mention.
Well, I mean, why not now? Those two aren't in the film either.
Yes.
And I don't have you That's seen right. any
with,
footage
with Luke or heard Perry?
Footage from that?
They no, have I've no I've chemistry. Never seen any they footage, no but chemistry. I can't imagine Luke Perry in this role.
Yeah, well, I've heard some audio from it, and it's bad. It's quite bad. They don't. There's no connection with them at all. There's no like there's none of the kind of effortless bouncing back and forth between them that Crystal and Ryan have.
Right. Oh wow. All right. So then the next thing we get on the screen is the title of the movie, When Harry Met Sally.
Dot dot dot.
Now one of the things that exactly the dot dot dot. Now do you know what that's called?
An ellipsis.
When you put three dots.
Ellipsis.
An ellipsis.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. Now I went in and did a search of how many other movies have ellipses in them.
Ooh.
Okay, and I found that there are 369 movies listed on IMDb.
I'm not going to name them all. Can't do that. I'm not going to.
Neither am I. Neither am I. I found six that I was going to mention. Okay, so first
anything?
Of all, you have.
Does it say anything? Have dot dot dot?
No.
No. Okay.
No. You have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
Okay. Then you have Better Off Dead. A shout out to the Better Off Dead Minute, which is currently dead. They haven't, they stopped in the middle. Which
they're better off.
Curtis, get back. Get back. We want to hear the rest of it. And then the next one that I found was a Ryan Reynolds comedy called Waiting.
Yes, I have seen Waiting. Yes.
You have? Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's fine. It's kind of that Ryan Reynolds period where he's it's kind of, there's some gross out humor. There's a whole running gag about a new member of the kitchen staff trying to show his testicles to everyone. It's like running, it's like some game they play at the restaurant. I'm like, oh, you get points if you show your testicles to people. And yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Jay,
that
I
kind
must.
of film.
I must say that you are correct. Say Anything also does have three dots on it.
Got
You
it.
are right.
Boom.
Yeah. That's interesting that it wasn't listed in the. I mean, I didn't. I in all honesty, I didn't go through all 369 films. I only went through the first.
370.
I only no. It's probably on that list. I only went through the first 50 because I figured those were the most important ones. But apparently, Say Anything should have been higher on that list. So yes,
because waiting is considered more important than Say Anything.
apparently, I don't know how it's listed. It says according to popularity, but I don't know what
like,
really that means.
David Koechner's in it. I think Justin Long might be in. I think he's the lead.
In what? In Waiting?
In Waiting, yeah. Yeah, because he's like a waiter who wants to do something else.
Waiting has there you go. Justin Long, Ryan Reynolds, Anna Faris, and John Francis Daly.
I don't remember him in it, but yeah, fine.
Yeah, John Francis Daly is an actor who was in Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, he's the guy I'm talking about who was trying to show his testicles to everyone. I couldn't picture him. But he's the character. I'm going to stop saying testicles now.
Yeah, so he was in the Judd Apatow TV show, Freaks and Geeks.
Okay.
And then he was on Bones for many years. And then he had his character killed off on Bones, said he could actually go and co-direct a movie. And he co-directed, do you know what movie? Vacation. Remake of Vacation. That was what he...
I didn't see that one.
Okay. And he also was one of the writers of Spider-Man Homecoming.
I saw that one. I liked that one a great deal.
Yes. Yes. So what other movies have dot, dot, dots? You have And Justice for All with Al Pacino from 1979, About Last Night from 1986, and a movie from 1968, which I'd never heard of, but sounds very interesting, called If with Malcolm McDowell.
I have seen If.
Is it worth watching?
It's on the 1,001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list, is If. It's I remember it being quite a brutal school set film.
It's apparently about like these kids that take over their school or something like that.
Yeah, but it's not like a nice, it's not like a fun, like, hey, the kids are taking over the school. It's, oh God, the kids are taking over the school kind of thing. It's been a few years since I saw it, but I have definitely seen it.
Yeah, okay.
But it didn't make much of an impression.
Apparently not. Apparently not.
I remember Waiting, but I don't remember if that's any help.
Okay. Whatever. I'm not even gonna go there. So the truth is, did you know that it was called an ellipsis? I didn't remember that that's what it was called. I had to look it up, see what it was called.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Okay. So what does an ellipsis mean when you use it in writing?
To be continued, generally, I think.
Right. It indicates
there is more to come.
Yeah. It indicates an omission. Right. And
we were taught at school, if you're writing a story, like, don't end it with an ellipsis. Like, people would like write a story like dot 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 at the end. Like, oh no, end it.
Right.
Find out, work out ending, and write the ending.
Right. Sometimes it can be used when someone's like trailing off of a thought, towards the end. Someone's just like thinking of something and whatever. Like, if you were to say, if only she had, oh, it doesn't matter now. Like you change the topic type of thing.
When it's put like at the end of a story, to me it's the equivalent of a horror film where like the last shot is the villain gets back up again.
Right.
Like, I hate that kind of thing. Like, no, let's have a self-enclosing story where they die.
Right.
Jason doesn't need to come back.
That's true. And it could also mean hesitation. Sometimes you can be stopping and then going with something else. And the website that I found this on, it says, like the exclamation point, the ellipsis is at risk of overuse. People like to use it a little too much, especially since there are 369 movies that use an ellipsis. So, but I mean, I like the fact that they use it here. It's When Harry Met Sally, and then, okay.
Yeah, it's the start of a story.
The start of a story. But you can say that about any movie. Star Wars. It's the start of a saga. Actually,
this
there's
sounds like,
another
honestly, let me tell you a story of how When Harry Met Sally. It's not, let me tell you the story of Die Hard. It doesn't really,
Right.
it's not the start of a story. This is like, what was that story? Oh, well, When Harry Met Sally is literally the start of a sentence.
Right.
But you know, that wasn't the original title of the film.
That is correct. What was the original title? Why don't you
It
tell
was
me?
something like How We Met or How They Met or something like
Yeah, it
that.
was something really silly.
And Rob Reiner didn't like it, so he had held a competition for anybody in the crew to come up with a better title, for which the prize was a case of champagne.
Yes. So it was right. It was originally called How They Met, and they kept changing the titles numerous times throughout that, and then they decided that they're going to start a contest, as you said. Yeah, it doesn't even tell you who actually thought of the idea.
I couldn't find who got it either.
Yeah.
But I greatly prefer the title When Harry Met Sally over the kind of generic How They Met,
Yeah.
because it's specific. It's like,
Yeah.
okay, so when you say When Harry Met Sally, you know what film people are talking about this film. When someone's like, something's got to give, it takes me a minute to work out, well, which one's that?
Right.
So Jack Nicholson's in it, but I mean, is it as good as it gets? Is it one of the other? Is it how do they know?
Right. Now, do you know who else was given the role or given the option of taking on the role of Harry?
Tom Hanks, I think, was up for it.
Yes, Tom Hanks, Richard
Who would
Dreyfuss.
never work with Nora Ephron and Meg Ryan ever again.
No, never, never. But he wouldn't work in this role, because you have to
No,
be.
I think it's perfectly cast. It would be a different film.
Yeah. So Tom Hanks, Richard Dreyfuss, Michael Keaton, and Albert Brooks, all four of them turned it down.
I can see all of them in that role. They'd need to tweak the character a little bit, but I think it would have worked. It would just be a different film.
Yes.
Not to say anything would be bad. They're all fantastic comedic actors.
Yeah, I think the best of them would have been
Richard
Albert
Dreyfuss,
Brooks.
maybe not.
Right. I think Albert Brooks would have been the best of them. You know,
Yeah, I can
he would
see
be
it.
able
I
to
can see
get
that
the
working.
tone, you know, not specifically what Billy Crystal gets, but he still would get a good dark tone for this type of character. You know, someone who has a very
Yeah, I
dark
think
side to them.
he's a little more acerbic, a little more negative, Albert Brooks, based on the characters I know him from, mainly Finding Nemo. But I he's like, well, think about like, but you know, also the films that he's actually in,
You've
Out
never
for
seen him.
Cuba,
Have you seen him in Broadcast
where he,
News or Defending
yes,
Your
Broadcast
Life?
News, or I haven't seen Finding Life, but I've seen Lost in America,
Okay.
and Real Life, those kind of films where he's always more like put upon and. He always seems
Yes.
very depressed every
Yes.
film he's in. Just where like I feel like if he was playing Harry would be harder to like. I love Albert Brooks, loving everything he does, but I feel like he's a difficult guy to get on with. Whereas Harry starts off that way, but you mellow over time and you kind of root for him. Whereas I think Albert Brooks, I rarely root for Albert Brooks in films.
Well, you're sort of
Like, yeah,
supposed to root
maybe you
for
bring
him,
this on
you
yourself.
know.
Yeah, but also cheer up. It's not all bad.
Okay.
Yeah,
So then we move along to the final credit of this minute is Carrie Fisher. Never heard of her.
heard of her. Who is
Never
this
heard of her.
person?
Now, for me, it was a little strange, you know, when I first saw this movie that she was in that she was here, because you don't think of her as a someone you'd put in a comedy, even though she is a comedian, you know, and she's a comedic writer. You know, she's done a lot of comedy writing, but just playing a character. Maybe it's because, you know, I think of her too much from you know, from Star Wars, where Princess Leia is not.
Oh, she is in Star Wars. Yes, you're right.
Yes,
Yeah,
yeah.
well, I feel
Don't
like
let Pete
she
and Alex
looks
hear you saying that you don't know
of course she's in Star Wars, Blues Brothers as well. I feel like she got this role more off the back of Hannah and her sisters than Star Wars, where she's more of a supporting she's not like a bad character. She's kind of a screws over some people in Hannah and her sisters a little bit. But she's more like the kind of the friend, the
Right.
side character, and she does a fantastic job in that one. But she's great here. She's, just a wonderful character, wonderful. It's great to have like her and Bruno Kirby. It's like, hey, this is your backup couple. You've got Meg Ryan, you've got Billy Crystal, but supporting cast is Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher. I mean, what do you need?
Yeah,
it's perfect.
I completely agree with you on that. So, I mean, she was in the Burbs, which came out the same year.
Yes. Yeah. Another great film. Shout out to the Burbs minute. Oh, cool.
I don't think of her as a comedic actor, but here in this movie, she does a great job. Because her character, first of all, her character is hilarious, but she's not trying to be hilarious.
I do think of her as a comedic actor because she has a lot of like funny lines in Star Wars, you know, walking carpet, and just the interactions that she has with in the love triangle of Han and Luke. I think she has some of the funnier moments.
Okay, but is she a comedic in
the Star Wars film?
But again, her character is not meant to be comedic. You know, she has comedic lines.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think she is at times supposed to be comedic. Like it's a kids' film. They're all supposed to be comedic.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. But, so you're saying that Yoda is also a comedy?
Absolutely. He's a freaking Muppet. I love the Star Wars films. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of Star Wars memorabilia around me. but Yoda's a... Of course he is. He's a...
Okay.
Yeah, he's, especially in the prequels.
Okay. That is fair. So, Carrie Fisher's name is Carrie Frances Fisher. She was born on the 21st of October, 1956, and she passed away on the 27th of December, 2016. She was the daughter of Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. Eddie Fisher was a singer, and Debbie Reynolds was an actress. She apparently stated in her autobiography that she had an affair with Harrison Ford, but I heard that Harrison Ford said that's not true. So I don't know who we're really supposed to believe when it comes to that one. I don't think it matters.
I try to stay out of these celebrity gossip things. I don't care, basically.
Right. She was married to first of all, she was engaged to Dan Aykroyd, who proposed to her while they were filming in the Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
And yep. Their relationship, they broke up. And then she got back together with the previous boyfriend, Paul Simon, who she ended up marrying. You know, the singer, Paul Simon.
Rainbow Connection, yeah.
Yeah, but they were only married for a year. And then they broke up, and then they were back together again, whatever. She ended up having a very long relationship with a talent agent named Brian Lord. And they had a daughter who was born in 1992.
Billy
Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, who apparently is in Star Wars also. Exactly. She's in the later Star Wars episodes. but apparently she would refer to him as her second husband, but they never got married. Huh. So in December 2016, she was on a flight back from I think it was England to America, and the person next to her saw that she stopped breathing, and they ended up performing CPR on her, and they had to land the plane. This was like 15 minutes before they had to land or something like that. Sorry, the flight was from London to L.A. That's where it is. And about 15 minutes before the plane was about to land, they had this medical emergency that someone saw that she had stopped breathing. They performed CPR on her until the paramedics were able to get there. And then she was placed on a ventilator in the hospital for almost a week, or 4 or 5 days, I think it was, something like that. And she ended up passing away at the age of 60. When they tried figuring out how she died or what she died of, there still is a lot of controversy as to whether it was, a heart attack or whether it was related to sleep apnea that she had, or whether it's related to heroin or opiates or other drugs, that possibly contributed to her death. I guess in the end, it doesn't really make a difference. What it comes down to is she left us with a great body of work. And I think that's what's interesting. Now, what's fascinating is the day after she died, her mother, Debbie Reynolds, suffered a stroke and died later that afternoon. So she and her mother basically died a day apart.
It's you mean you hear all the time about the couples who, like, when one passes, the other one passes very soon after. So, yeah, it's very sad. It's a very sad time.
Yes, that's very sad. And that's how this minute ends. We had a little bit to talk about this minute. Well, obviously through the course of the movie, we'll talk more about these actors and their characters and things that they do. But so Jay, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
I mean, the song that's being played, we can talk more about tomorrow, I guess, because we can talk about the player tomorrow. Yeah, we'll talk about the music tomorrow.
Okay.
I think we covered far more than I thought. I was expecting you to be like, what do you know about the color black? Because that's mostly what we see on screen.
No, but it's black with white on the inside. You know, so.
Yes. Well,
the Oreo cookies. White test. Oreo cookies. There you go. Yeah. Right. So
I think we went far more into detail than we needed to.
Yeah, but it's still fun anyway. What can I tell you? I find that fun. So the script of When Harry Met Sally, the copy that I have is from the 23rd of August, 1988. And, you know, it says original screenplay by Nora Ephron, Rob Reiner, and Andrew Scheinman. It says on Castle Rock Pictures, Raleigh Studios, had address, copyright 1988, Castle Rock Entertainment, all rights reserved. Obviously, there is nothing that happens in the script in this minute.
In the script, obvious reasons. Meg Ryan's name is first.
Yeah. But what's interesting is it says the number of revisions that they have on the script. Now, back then, I think they're pretty much typing these things. You know, maybe they had word processors or whatever, but, you know, having to retype the script every single time you make changes is just crazy. This is the 12th revision.
They probably wouldn't have to retype the whole thing.
Just the pages that they were changing.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, it says here they have revisions on August 3rd, 4th, 9th, 11th, 12th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 19th, 19th. You have two on the same day, 22nd, and then this is on the 23rd. So that's still pretty amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So what have you got for us, Jay?
I am the worst person to start this feature because I have seen almost five Meg Ryan films.
So you're going to give us almost five, an almost top five.
I've seen more Bruno Kirby films than I have Meg Ryan films. Yeah, I don't know what it is. She's one of those actresses. I don't hate her at all. She just kind of passed me by without really making much of a dent in terms of my film watching.
Well, you can make a change. You can change that now.
I'd love to have the time to do that, Rob. I really would. But also, I did look at her. I kind of knew this podcast was coming up. I looked at what films are available streaming from her. None of them really appealed to me all that much. I don't know what it is. She just makes films that I don't really... I don't know. She's not in any.
Well, let me see if I can think of four. Let me see. I'm not going to guess the order, but okay. So you've seen this movie.
I have seen five. I've definitely seen.
Okay, so the so five that I think you've seen, and I could be wrong, is When Harry Met Sally, Top Gun. Okay, Sleepless in Seattle. You've Got Mail. And what would I guess for the fifth one?
You should know what the fifth one is because we've discussed it.
It's not Die Hard.
Well, we've discussed it. I've seen
it. It's not Die Hard.
we haven't podcasted about it, but it's come up in conversation. And you've got at least one wrong.
Side. Okay, that's fair. So either you haven't seen Sleepless or you've got Mail. That's the other one I was thinking of.
Or Top Gun.
No, I'm assuming you've seen Top Gun. I'm pretty sure you've seen it.
I haven't seen Top Gun Maverick yet.
But she's not in it, so you don't have to worry about that.
I wouldn't know.
Well,
tried to.
You tried to? Don't you know there is no try, there is do.
Okay, I didn't. Okay. I tried to do. I failed.
We discussed it. Well, I would say Inner Space, but I know you hate Dennis Quaid, so why would you see it? Oh, wait a second. I know what it is. I know. Wait a second.
Yeah, I've seen it.
You've seen Inner Space?
No, I'm not answering it. Okay. Is that your guess for the fifth one?
It's the one with the Proof of Life you've seen.
Okay.
I think.
So my number five is You've Got Mail. Because I'm pretty sure I've seen it. But I don't remember anything about it.
Okay.
It may have been Sleepless in Seattle. I don't know. but I'm pretty sure I've seen one of them.
Well, did she have short hair or long hair?
I don't know. It made such a little impression on me that I don't know. I think my wife was probably watching it at some point, and I was doing something else in the same room. So that's as close as I can do to number five. Well, number four is Proof of Life, which was the podcast I used to host, the Lambcast, which is a show that you and I met on, has recently done a movie of the month on Proof of Life with a future guest on this show, Roger Wistar, who is a far bigger fan of that film than anybody. That'll be his number one. When you get that far, it's a bad film. It's not a bad film. It's just not a good film that I regret spending money on watching that film. Number three is Top Gun. I'm not a Top Gun fan. I think she's very good in it. I think it's a great kind of early role for her. It's just not a film I enjoy. I love Tom Cruise. Love Tom Cruise action films. Top Gun is just far too boorah, go America for me. And I know a lot of English people who like it too. I'm just not one of them. My number two is Innerspace. I have seen Innerspace, despite my general dislike for Meg Ryan's ex-husband.
Apparently Meg Ryan doesn't like him either.
I don't blame her, but I feel like, well, I mean, Proof of Life was the reason that their marriage ended. So
yes. No, Russell Crowe is the reason her marriage ended. But whatever.
Because of Proof of Life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Innerspace. A film I enjoyed in spite of Dennis Quaid, who I think is a villain in every film that he's in, especially in like Innerspace Age. Dennis Quaid looks like just the most evil person in the world. I don't know what it is about him. I just don't like him. But Meg Ryan's fine in it. Martin Short is great in it. Our number one is, of course, When Harry Met Sally, which... I feel like most people are going to be putting When Harry Met Sally at the top of this list, because I think it's the film Meg Ryan is known for being the best in. She gets the most of like an arc to do. When Harry Met Sally kind of feels like a TV show, in that you're with these characters for so much of their life, they get to develop. They start in a place mm-hmm. where they end, like far more, like it's the span of 12 years, I think it is. Over the course of the film, so you get to see a TV like 8 or 9 series of a TV show's time of these characters, but condensed into fewer than 100 minutes. So, and she does a fantastic job. I was going to come here and say, my top five Meg Ryan films: Hunt for October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Day. But it was, you know, someone else can make that joke. I'm sure. I haven't seen 5 Jack Ryan films, so. I still haven't seen Clear and Present Danger. I may not.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you for that, Jay. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, I'll do one plug a day, I think. So Con Air, the podcast, is the podcast that I'm doing currently, where myself and my co-host Mark Hoffmeyer from Movies, Films and Flicks and Rotten Tomatoes are going through Con Air 97 Action Nick Cage Classic. One scene at a time. We do a scene a week rather than a minute a day, because that fits our schedule better. Rob was a guest a couple of months ago at this point for a chapter, and we're having a great time talking about that ridiculous and incredibly fun film. So Con Air hyphen the podcast, all places where podcasts can be found.
Alright, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go to my website, movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.